retrospect, should the Bears have kept the number one overall draft choice they traded to Carolina and selected C.J. Stroud, or was the bounty that now has included Caleb Williams too rich to pass upon? When and how will the answer to that question be determined? Is the ring the thing?
Man, I love this question, and I love talking about it yesterday, and I'm very excited to talk about it again today, because I think that you know, the career sort of trajectory of players, it's like a real thing, and it does go through different phases, though, where you can kind of go, you can see ups and downs, and you can see what looks like a guy heading in a certain direction, and then there may be a delay, and then back on track. I mean, it's just fun to watch this happen and to watch it unfold. And I think part of the problem in Chicago is that we've never really gotten a chance to watch it happen, right? We never, like in the 1940s, they took a running back and moved him to quarterback and debuted a new offense, and Sid Luckman became, the holder of every record ever produced by a Bears quarterback. And it was just this wonderful thing where they were doing all sorts of things that hadn't been seen before. And they were doing all sorts of stuff that they were introducing it to the professional game. I'm not sure we've ever seen that kind of innovation again from the Chicago Bears, certainly not on offense. I think that we did witness when the whole Brett Favre thing happened in Green Bay, there was this feeling that you couldn't do that sort of an offense in the weather and blah, blah, blah. And that came, that was fun to kind of watch. It's pretty extraordinary when you start talking about these quarterbacks, especially guys that are taken with the first or second pick, because there are so many requirements, and they're pushed out on the field so quickly in most cases. And it's just different for some people that have sort of the right system, the right support. You need to land in the right spot, and it's never been the right spot in Chicago, no matter who it is. And I don't know what would have happened if they got C.J. Stroud, frankly, and not improved their team. But I'm really looking forward to watching Caleb Williams. And the ring is the thing. And he's been not unafraid of talking about his aspirations and his ambitions, and I think it's great.
If I'm right, the Bears also lucked into that number one overall pick from the Carolina Panthers. They didn't know they were going to get the number one pick. They figured they'd get a top three pick, top four, worst case scenario, but so many things had to line up for them to get that. And who's to say that they wouldn't have drafted Bryce Young? You were going to replace an Ohio State quarterback with an Ohio State quarterback? I don't think they would. I don't think C.J. Stroud would have been on their radar. Plus, the Bears were not just a quarterback away from being relevant. They needed to create, they had so many holes to fill. So I don't think C.J. Stroud was ever a real option, was really on their radar for the things I just mentioned.
I don't disagree. I don't think they would have taken Stroud number one overall, whether they lucked into it or not. The fact was still the weighing the option of keeping the pick and taking your generational quarterback or trading it and getting what they got. They clearly made the right decision. And I don't think that in the final analysis, I don't think the ring will be the thing. After thinking about it, I don't think it's an even, to me, this falls under the category of no-brainer. This was a no-brainer because at the point in time where they were deciding what to do and whether to keep it or trade it, they had so many holes on the roster. They had to fortify, and they had needed to build from the ball on out, or they needed to do something to get blue players on a roster that had no elite talent. So this is now and always will be the right decision in retrospect or otherwise. It was at the time, and it will age well. And I say that even understanding that C.J. Stroud is closer to winning a Super Bowl than Caleb Williams is. I think that it's also a statement you can say safely because the Texans have done a terrific job of building that roster. And he plugged into it nicely. And once he showed that he was capable of doing what he did as a rookie, they went out and they got Joe Mixon. They went out and they got Stephon Diggs. They went out and they got Danielle Hunter. They plugged in pieces and they filled voids. And that is ideally what the Bears will do. And why we all think in Chicago, Caleb Williams coming here, which coincides with the other stuff that came because of that trade. Because of that trade, the Bears can think they're viable Super Bowl contenders within the next 5 years.
Yeah, I'm not talking necessarily about a pick six or something like that.
Voice of Brad Biggs, Biggs Time, 7 a.m. What did you make of cornerback Tyreek Stevenson being named the NFC Defensive Player of the Week following his game-winning pick six in the Bears opener? Will he be the first of several members of the secondary to be so honored this season, given Bears DBs have 12 interceptions since week 11 of last year, the most in the NFL over that stretch?
I love that stat. I love this secondary. I think that they have talent. I think that they are well coached. Chirp, chirp. John Hoke does a terrific job with the safeties and the cornerbacks and all the guys that contribute to this. It does take a village. It's not just one guy. The Bears have two, dare I say, they have one elite corner and one guy who's on the verge and is capable of getting there. Tyreek Stevenson can play because he's physical, he's got a short memory, and he's got tremendous talent. And he's fearless. And you see that. And he did what he needed to do. If I'm not wrong, he was the NFC Defensive Player of the Week one week last year, right? As a rookie. He's piling up quite the accolades for a young player that you didn't expect as much out of this soon in his career. And he pairs nicely with Jalen Johnson on the other side. Oh, by the way, Kyler Gordon playing the nickel spot is going to be impactful this year. This is a good group. These are elite defensive backs. And this is arguably one of the top five secondaries in the National Football League. And you look at their ability to make things happen. We saw it from day one against the Titans. Jalen Johnson, his numbers were tremendous, and he got the pick to kind of show for it. So I wouldn't be surprised if by the end of the season we're talking about Jalen Johnson in these terms, maybe Kyler Gordon as well. And Jaquan Brisker would like a word because he was pretty active too.
Yeah, I would. I'm shocked by this, to be honest. When's the last time a defensive player of the week allowed a passing receiving touchdown? He that was on him. They talked about it. The analyst talked about it. Said he did not get his eyes back on the quarterback. That could have been an interception if he had just turned around when the receiver's eyes got wide. That could have been a pick. And that was a back-breaking score at that point. I'm just shocked that he got it. I would have actually given it to the guy who comes on the afternoon show. I would have given it to Jalen Johnson for that pick and the fact that nobody throws at him. And when they do, they don't complete a pass. I'm just shocked that a defensive player of the week allowed a touchdown and got that award.
Well, I love this question and I love that statistic in large part because of how important interceptions are. And I believe it was Peyton Manning who once said, every interception has a story. And that is true. Generally speaking, interceptions are put on quarterbacks. They are guilty of them, whereas defensive backs are credited with them. And I think that there are exceptions to that rule always. Tip passes, plays that can turn into interceptions that have nothing to do with the quarterback, that are not the quarterback's fault. In this case, this is a great example of an interception that was clearly the quarterback's fault, and the defensive back gets credit, defensive player of the week credit, for catching a ball thrown to him in a very catchable fashion and returning it down an open sideline for a touchdown. It's the game-deciding play, so you understand it. But it also, Jalen Johnson in that game probably played like significantly better, had an interception to end the game, almost had an interception earlier in the game on a play he was recovering from. He had been beaten initially, and he doubled back, and the throw was late. Again, that would have been on the quarterback. I love that Caleb Williams came out of that game clean and that there were no turnovers from the Bears' perspective, but that is just also the nature of football luck. And there were a couple of plays that could have gone the wrong way. I'll just say that I love that statistic. I think interceptions are incredibly important, and I think it's great that the Bears had a player to get that sort of recognition for the first game of the year. And I would imagine there'll be about three of them before the year is over, because I think that Kyler Gordon, if he has a kind of game as he had in the preseason, he could be the defensive player of the week one time. I think Jalen Johnson, if he does get it, an extra pick here or there. And you're right, Dustin. He did give up a touchdown that game, but it tells you the value of the interception. Really important statistic.
Yeah, it's a good question.
How would you describe the way Cole Kmet publicly handled playing 27 snaps in the Bears opener?
You know, I'm a guy, obviously, I view myself as a top tight end in this league. I think I've shown that over the past couple of seasons, and I feel like I'm at a point in my career now where I can be one of the very best in the league. You know, that being said, like, I can only control what I can control, you know what I mean? And, you know, that's kind of how I have to go about it. You know, everyone here has an ego, and I think, you know, I have an ego, you have an ego, you know, everyone's got an ego in our locker room, and it's just about how you manage it. And it's important to always check your ego at the door when you walk in the building. And for me, that's always about doing what's asked of me. And so if it means, hey, you know, Cole, you're only gonna be playing 10 to 15 snaps this game. Cole, we need you to play 50 snaps this game. Cole, we need you to play every single snap this game. Cole, we need you to do some special team reps. Like, whatever that is, that's what I got to do for this team. And that's what I'm about as a player.
Bears tight end Cole Kmet there. Privately, do you think Kmet handled it differently? Do you think the Bears will make a more concerted effort to target Kmet against the Texans Sunday night?
I really like the way he handled it. I thought he handled it really well, and I think it must have been difficult for him because he did mention that, yeah, I have an ego. Yeah, I want to play. Yeah, I want to be a part of everything. I thought he did very well for himself, and I thought that all the stories that were written about him reflected very well on him. I don't think they reflected very well on the offensive coordinator, and I know they were in one tight end formation quite a bit. I just don't understand quite why it was Gerald Everett over him in a lot of those plays. And I'm not picking on Gerald Everett. I'm just saying that when you're talking about young quarterbacks, I know it's going to be different this week because they've got defensive ends, really good defensive ends, and you're going to need help from tight ends to combat that. The tight end is also a young quarterback's best friend, right? He is always a guy that is going to fight for the ball and has like NFL open to him. And it's a great release valve for a quarterback. And I think Kmet's a real good player, and he's very willing as a blocker. And I think he tries to be ego-less about it. And I applaud him for the way that he handled it. But I'm not surprised because he's a bright guy and he understands the game and how kind of personalities can be intrusive, like a lot of the guys on the Bears seem to understand, as opposed to some other teams. And it's one of the things I really admire about DJ Moore. And I think that it's I want to see the guy play significantly more, and I want them to make a concerted effort to get the ball to him. And I think he deserves that.
Well said. You know, we like to say local guy made good, also a Notre Dame product. So I like Cole Kmet quite a bit. Cole Kmet is getting paid like a guy who gets 10 targets a game and catches 8 of those 10. And I think that also makes it a little bit easier to take the high road. Not saying that he wouldn't, but I think even privately, he's probably okay with it. It's game number one. He had to know with all these weapons that they've given Caleb Williams that, you know, ball distribution was going to be interesting. But I do think the snap count, you know, kind of, I think he just kind of got lost in the shuffle of the first game.
I think Cole Kmet handled himself like a pro during that CHGO interview, expressed himself very professionally, and it had to be difficult. There's no excuse for Cole Kmet playing fewer than 50% of the snaps or playing as 27 out of 56 snaps, however you want to do the math, he should be on the field at least 70% of the time. This is on Shane Waldron. This is inexcusable for an offensive coordinator. I don't care if he's in the first game or the last game or the third year or whatever. This is a bad look for an offensive coordinator trying to build credibility in the city, in the locker room. Colt Kmet handled it as well as he could have. Yes, you have to check your ego at the door, but if he considers himself a top 10 tight end, then he's not happy.
No, he's not.
He's not at all happy. And Caleb Williams can use Colt Kmet if he is indeed as good as he just said that he is. And the Bears are paying him to be. So stay tuned. If this continues to be a problem with personnel groupings that are strange, with playing time that raises your eyebrow, not only here but in the locker room, Shane Waldron will have some explaining to do, and I'm looking forward to his explanation later today.
Wow, that's a good question.
Voice of John Heyman will be here at 7:40 with Mully and Haw. What is your response to White Sox chairman Jerry Reinsdorf releasing a statement yesterday saying everyone in the organization is, quote, extremely unhappy, end quote, praising continued work ethic and professionalism and claiming, quote, I expect to have more to say at the end of the season, end quote. What do you hope to hear from the chairman?
Well, if you could hear a shrug, that would be my audible response, because this is not very satisfying. This is the definition of perfunctory. You have a chairman who has been asked repeatedly for comment on what is a historically bad season on the South Side, which follows a 100-loss season, which created the necessity and the urgency and the mandate to fire a manager who was overmatched, who was working for a general manager who was promoted for reasons that are still unclear. Make them clear. Speak, Jerry Reinsdorf. Don't issue statements. Something that came out of your publicist's computer does not necessarily fit the criteria for a reasonable response to a miserable season. I'm looking forward to the postseason address, state of the White Sox press conference, if you will, from Jerry Reinsdorf. I want to know about the incompatibility of the comments of the Chris Getz hire. He was hired because it was a quicker path back to respectability. And then we hear from the general manager himself saying that they expected to lose 100 games. Those two things don't equate and compute or add up. I want to hear about his plan for the new stadium, if one still exists. I want to hear him say where he stands on moving the White Sox. Is he committed to keeping them here? All these things. And then how did it get so bad? Don't the fans deserve better? They've lost 26 of the last 27 in front of the home crowd. This is inexcusable. And the response yesterday was unsatisfying.
It's about damn time that we got something. The question that I would like to have answered is, Chris Getz inferred that another 100-loss season could happen in 2025. Are you prepared to give Chris Getz the resources to avoid another 100-loss season?
Great question.
Yeah, I mean, Jerry's insouciance is hardly anything I eagerly anticipate enjoying. I mean, he is carefree. He's worry-free. He's just going to, a bunch of people want to talk to me. Write them something, you know. AI, what do you tell a bunch of mopes when they want your attention and you can't be bothered? That's what this was. I'm sorry. This does literally nothing for me. We had a texter who says, can't believe you haven't talked about Reinsdorf's statement. What? Why would you? What does his statement say? Oh, it's painful for everyone, even the fans. Especially the fans. What? You know, there's nothing that he, you know what he could say? And you know what I want to know? Why don't you just sell the team? Hey, you know, if he came out with a statement, hey, I'm selling the team, I'm getting out of here, you guys deserve better than me. But, you know, I'd stand and applaud. South Side, stand up. That sounds great. That's about all I want to hear. I mean, what is this? What are we supposed to care about their professionalism?
One key question I wish and hope he addresses is that they did replace a general manager with a general manager. There's a big void in the White Sox front office with the lack of a team president, with somebody with some gravitas. Would you be willing? Are you willing to spend whether it's money on players or front office resources, to rebuild in that way and get somebody who does have some heft.
I mean, I think you asked like four questions there.
Where are you with the Cubs after the Dodgers series now that they have a day off today? And then the Rockies, A's, Nationals in that order. Of those nine games, how many do you realistically expect the Cubs to win?
I got to tell you, I expect them to win pretty much all but one of those games. I don't think they can afford
8-1
to lose. I think they have to go 8-1. I don't think they can afford to even lose two of them. I think the Rockies are not competitive. The ball is flying out of there. I would expect the Cubs to score a minimum 10 runs a game out there. I'm not kidding you. How many did they score again? 25 against the Dodgers, right? 7, 8, and 10? Is that right? I mean, that's pretty damn good, isn't it? So just take your bats with you, get out there, and clobber them. Literally clobber them. And then get on a nice three-game roll and carry it over. I mean, look, is it fair to say that they, if they win these series, if they just go 2-1? No, that's beyond that. They really need to sweep these teams, but I'll throw one game for them. But if they really are serious about being in this thing, that's what they have to do.
8-9 is realistic, and 8 out of 9 is what needs to be done.
They're really in a bind right now. They almost have to play perfect baseball, and they still have something to fight for, as we heard last night from Craig Counsell when he was explaining why Seiya Suzuki tried to steal third base with a left-handed batter at the plate in the ninth inning when they're down 10-8. I'm still not over that yet, but looking ahead, I don't know if it's possible, guys. 5 down with 16 to play now. Is that what they have left? I just don't look at this as something that I can't do the math. I want to do the math. I want it to work out. I want everything to be fine. I don't think it's fine. I don't think it's working out, and it doesn't compute.
Oh, that's a great question.
Ooh, it's the voice of Nick Costos, 844 with week 2 NFL numbers. A hockey question. Blackhawks first round draft pick, Artie Lezhnov, the number 2 overall pick, injured his right foot and will be in a walking boot for weeks, according to Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet. Lezhnov will miss this weekend's showcase and will be behind schedule when training camp opens later this month. What's your level of concern?
Not ready for this. I'm not ready to be concerned about the Blackhawks. There's only so much sports stress one can take on. Artie the party? He's hurt? In a walking boot?
Party's over.
Party hasn't even started. You can't tell me it's over now. All right, let's not overreact. Maybe it's just a tweak. Maybe it's just a thing. He's a hockey guy. Rub some dirt on it. I don't know how injury prone he's going to be. This is not a good omen, though. The first time he's on the ice, he's going off of it. I don't like this. I'm very curious about his ability to make this team. They went full veteran mode in the offseason. They got a lot of guys with some miles on those tires, so to speak. I don't know where Artie fits in. Getting off to this kind of start, not good. It says to me that he's likely to start slow and start the season in Rockford.
0. It's September 12th. It's going to be 90 degrees today. Oh. Week 2 of the NFL kicks off right here on The Score tonight, and the Cubs are still mathematically alive. So my interest or my concern is 0.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I think, as David said, when you're looking for omens, this is a bad one, right? This is the prospect camp, and the guy is on the ice for warm-ups before they've even started practice, and he catches a puck on his right foot. And I saw that Sorensen, the coach of the Ice Hogs, is running the practices, and he's like, oh, well, he's very disappointed. He wants to play, but at least he's not feeling a lot of pain right now. The pain's kind of subsided. I think that, unfortunately, Sorensen should get used to a good relationship with Artie the Party Levchanum, because I think he's going to wind up in Rockford if that's the case. I'm just being honest about it. This is supposed to be a year where the Blackhawks are more competitive and putting together a team that's harder to make. So, you know, you got to be able to play to make it. So I hope he's okay. I mean, I hope he's able to be back and ready and prove his mettle. I think he's going to be a real good player in the NHL. I just think it's just sad that this is the way it started, and hopefully he can be with the Blackhawks, but I don't know. I think he might start in Rockford.
Dustin, if Cam Smith, the Cubs' first-round draft pick next February, ends up getting hit in the ankle on the first day of spring training, You're going to say you're not concerned?
Cubs greater than Blackhawks.
This guy.
Did you see that Joe Buck's wife got injured?
Yes, shattered ankle.
He apparently hit her with a drive. They were out golfing. They were about to go to lunch, and she was doing. Did you read this?
Yes.
She was doing like a handstand,
mm-hmm.
and then she was dropping into a splits while he was teeing off, and he just somehow wound up hitting her in the foot.
Freak accident.
Former NFL freak. Cheerleader.
Wow. Well, I guess that's how you end up going from the handstand to the splits. But that's terrible.
It is.
What's worse, that injury or Levchin?
I think that injury. Yeah.
I might be more interested in Joe Buck's wife.
Oh, wow. That's football. Another shot.
It's football season.
It's a second overall pick.
We've got
Artie the Party.
We've got the, see, it's my fault for even commenting. It's.